We've made it. We've made it to what is now the end of our week. Because remember, we're taking Fridays off for the rest of the summer, Carrie.
Well, people didn't want to watch a business success show at 7 p.m. on Fridays.
Yeah, so they stopped coming. So, you know, you didn't bring me flowers. But we do have one big blast of a show today, don't we?
We do. I'm very excited. We're going to talk to Rebecca Louisa Smith, who is also known as the Film Doctor, about how she helps people to get their films seen all around the world. She's also the author of the book Born to Do It, Becoming the Leader of a Business Niche Using Powerful Spiritual Techniques.
So we can talk consulting, we can talk entrepreneurship, and we can talk spiritual film. Techniques. Film, as they sometimes
say. Film.
Welcome to the Backpack Show with your hosts, Chris Brogan and Carrie Gargone. Boom shakalaka.
He always makes me smile. Hi, Coach.
I just imagine, even though it's 80-something degrees where you are, I just imagine you in your smoking jacket. So good to see you, Coach.
Sitting back in your smoking jacket watching the Backpack Show.
Mm-hmm. You know
with
what?
With a pipe.
And there's Leslie. I'm going to do a couple of ad reads at the very beginning so we can get them out of the way ahead of time.
Perfect.
And then as things go on, I almost feel like I should leave Kate's until she shows up 40 minutes into the show. not that I'm saying.
Probably.
Hey, sure. You know who's got a show? Deanna Shas. It's called Intercultural Spark. And it was today at 10 a.m. Central Time. You didn't watch it? Come on now. You can go
That's
to interculturalspark.com and check it out. She's done some
advertising
great
a show on our show.
It's a show and a show. So like we're almost like a network. And how do we both make these shows? We use StreamYard. Whack. It's a great app that lets you make show quality shows. All you need is to fidget with all the little buttons. And probably
show people's
else.
Comments like, hola, from yes. Rainy Austin, Texas.
Rainy Austin. It's actually kind of gray here in Boston. Let's do the weather report. little gray in Boston. I'm in my weather helicopter.
It was pouring rain today in Nashville, Tennessee until it was hot, sunny, and humid. So now you're all cut up.
Let's grab Rebecca Louisa Smith, the film doctor.
Film doctor.
And ask her film things. Now, how does one give one that sort of moniker? Did you have to, you know, do some film surgeries? Like, how did that happen?
So I have a PhD in film and audience research. And I thought what I wanted to do was have a career in academia. When I realized that I didn't, when I began to work in the film festival area and distribution in film. So I thought, well, I'm a doctor. And my company is going to help people get their films into festivals. So why not call it the Film Festival Doctor?
It's that simple and it makes perfect sense. Who'd have thunk? What's wrong with most people's films?
That's a really good question. Predominantly, what is wrong with them to not get into really big festivals is the story can be not particularly very unique or groundbreaking. And that also can sometimes come with a not a very well-written script and poor acting, if it's a bad one. A lot of the time, they're great, but you do get those films where they just haven't got it all in alignment.
What's the
first thing you need? So first of all, what's the first thing you need to address in that situation? Because there's multiple pillars that are not standing up and pulling, supporting their weight. But also, how do you present that to someone? Because they think this is like a really good idea.
That's my question. We're so together on this. Okay, go.
Yeah. So the way to do it is when a client says, I'm sure this could do the big festivals like Sundance, Slam Dance, Cannes, Berlin, all these big ones you've probably heard of. And the way I say it is, this is for a different audience, different market. That would be smaller festivals that would appreciate the concept and what you're trying to do and forgive those mistakes. And then you'll get it seen by the right audience and be celebrated. So it's very careful how you break that down. Because obviously they can be, as you know, very attached to it emotionally because I've spent probably years finishing the film.
So if they're sort of like, you know, this is a film about my mother's last dying days or something like that, you can't really go, well, that's pretty boring. You have to kind of warm them up to the idea that it's maybe not the best treatment.
Exactly. So it's a case of saying, okay, this is for a different kind of market. It's not for the more general commercial audience. It's for more specialist one in maybe documentary film festivals that would appreciate what you're trying to do here. And they can then go, oh, okay, so there is an audience, then take it from there. But yeah, it's being very, very careful with the approach, because I appreciate how much they love the film and how much effort's gone into it. But it is important to know that when the film is finished, it becomes a product. It's not no longer their baby or their work of art. It's a product to sell and to get out there to be seen by audiences.
How did you first get into the film industry? So you were originally working as a personal assistant in corporate settings and stuff like that. At what point did you become interested in film?
So I've always had an interest in film because I always liked watching them and going to the theatre, etc., when I was living in the UK. And I always liked to study film in the theories that were about. It was really fun. And then I did my PhD. And someone said, oh, you should, you know, go into the world of academia because you like researching film and stuff. And I was like, okay, I'll do that. Then it was all like divinely planned, I feel. But the PhD is a hard thing to do. It's not an overnight thing. It takes a lot of time. It's very isolating and it's very solitary because it is writing and researching. It's interesting, but it's very much a one-on-one time. And a friend of mine got asked to produce a horror film festival at the university in the theatre. And he said, do you want to help out? Because I need some help in terms of getting this produced, and I don't know quite what I'm doing. But I was like, yeah, why not? It'll be a nice distraction. Then when I got really into the festival, and I just really enjoyed doing this more than my PhD. So I soon realized when I was at a conference, academic conference, one of my friends turned around to me and said, isn't academia the best thing in the world? And I thought, no, it's not for me. I just want to be more now in the film industry. This is what I love to do. And then I found there was a gap in the market, but nobody at the time, there wasn't many people doing what I do at the time, helping people get their films into festivals and strategizing. Because the main pain point the filmmakers were having at that time was they loved festivals, but they didn't know how to get their film into a festival. They didn't know who to turn to ask if it was the right plan and what to do. So I thought, I can do this. I can do this for sure, without a doubt. And 10 years later, I pulled it off.
Like that.
Just like that.
Just a scant 10 years.
So yeah, oh my goodness. But what made it worse is that I had skills in project management with the PhD and researching and knowing how to break micromanage a project. But I didn't have any entrepreneur skills. I didn't know how to run a business. So it wasn't like literally just like that. I wish it was. It was a lot of trial and error.
There's a thought that came to me as you were talking about the various festivals that you've been part of and gone to, and how certain there's documentary festivals or even documentary sections in festivals. So places like Cannes, Tribeca, and all the other kinds of places where you're getting someone prepped for, are they different in their criteria for them? I mean, clearly, if it's like, this is a pride festival, well, then clearly you don't do your country Western straight guy movie there. But I mean, how different is Cannes and Tribeca for who we get there?
So all of those big tier festivals, they all look for outstanding, high quality films, whether it be documentary, short film, fiction, nonfiction, whatever it is. In terms of the differences, there are micro differences. So, for example, with Cannes, they don't have a huge short film program. They have about 15, 20 short films that are all general. So there's no specific theme. They're just high quality short films. But for example, with Tribeca, you get a lot of different types of themes with their short film programs. They actually have a sci-fi program of short films, whereas Cannes does not. South by Southwest has themes, but not particularly all sci-fi. So they all kind of differ a little bit, but they all have the same backbone that they look for those high quality films. And sometimes you'll find that the same films at those festivals do travel around the same ones. So you might see at Tribeca that short film that you saw at Cannes, because it's doing the rounds and it's at that high standard and it needs to get seen in a different audience. So it tends to be just very subtle in terms of programming.
This has nothing to do with the last set of questions, but you sure spend a lot of time with Gala.
I love that dog. Actually, I saw it today. So the story to that is that dog is one of my good friends here in Mexico City. He's a good friend of mine. He's also a very good hairdresser. And he has these beautiful two German boxers, and she is like a real person, that dog. They're so, so sweet, and they're so well looked after. But they're just a nice, I find dogs really good therapy, because they're so kind and so sweet. Like, those, look, just give me a kiss there. And that's her brother Luger, just chilling out, you know, being the boss as he is. But they're absolutely stunning dogs, and everyone loves them when you see them because they're just so kind. They don't ever bark or shout. They're like, again, they're like humans, really. Just the nicest humans. But they're lovely dogs, and I don't get many of them around here, Mexico City, German boxers. They're quite rare.
Coach Woodard wants to know, what is your favorite film festival?
Oh my God, there is quite a lot on that list, actually. But I think the festival which will always be my favorite film festival is where I began my career and began the whole my whole life in film festivals, is the Abattoir Horror Festival, which is the one based in Wales. It started off very small, like we had no idea what to do at first, and Gaz, the director, is a wonderful festival director. And he, you know, is a massive fan of horror. So he had that vested interest. And I like horror too, but he's a proper, like, you know, knows it inside out. And it was going to be like a local festival, but now it's grown and grown. And I'm not part of it anymore because I've moved away, obviously. But I always follow it. And it is such a great festival in terms of looking after guests, the programming and the films, the events we have on. And it is just one of the best horror festivals now in the world.
What if somebody has come to you with a film that is an unmitigated disaster? Like, the idea is terrible. Like, how can they turn it around? I know we've talked about a few of the things they need to work on, but if you're looking at the thing from like top to bottom and you're like, wow, this is going to be bad. Is there a way to salvage like the seed of the idea? Or do you just have to sometimes tell people, maybe be a dental assistant or something? Like,
so we did actually have a film like that come our way, and it could be salvaged by getting in a new editor to really shorten it and work around the bad acting and to bring out the story. It was quite a long short film. It was about 18 minutes. I know that sounds quite short, but sometimes short films that go over 15 minutes or more, they've got to justify why they're that length and be a good story. But this one was just meandering, and it wasn't high end. It was the first timer, but there was something good in there. And I was like, if you're happy to get in a new editor with a fresh pair of eyes, if you're happy to cut this down and remove the passion from it and make it then work, we can work on this. So it went down from 80 minutes to 10, which is quite a lot of time to chunk out of the film. And it just, pace changed. It was much better. I said, look, it's not going to do anything big. It's not going to do anything major. But it now has a better chance of getting into smaller festivals before it will get into nothing. And he listened to that and he said, okay, I trust you that it'll be fine to do. And he did take it on board and he did change it, and it was a lot better. So I was very impressed that he did do that. Otherwise, it would have been disaster. It would have been going to be a plumber. But sometimes you get people where I say, look, this has got problems with sound. Can you fix the sound? Because that's going to be a big thing to change here. And you know yourself has got some issues. Are you willing to change it if they say, no, we can't, or it is what it is, that it's like, right, for the next film, make these things differently so you don't make the same mistakes, you know, so do these things differently. So we give them advice how to really help them on the journey to get it seen, to get the next film seen in festivals that will be able to give them some kudos.
Related to that, you know, I was poking around of like I have been in your Instagram. Mm. This thing's been to 75 festivals. That seems a little much.
Yeah.
So here's what I don't know. What do festivals, well, I thought I knew. And then I saw that. I was like, I know nothing. What do festivals do besides earn you some new laurel thingies to put at the beginning and end of your trailers? Like, what do people do at festivals? I know there are some that qualify one for Oscars, but I also want to know, maybe some are for distribution. Like, why do I have to go to 75 film festivals?
Yeah. So with that film, that was a festival darling. That is a brilliant piece of work. And every time we screened at a festival, more festivals wanted to see it and screen it because it was very in demand. And also it had lots of layers to it. It was by a female director. It also had a lot of stars in. And also it was a story that was able to travel to festivals that were not just short film festivals and general ones, but also horror film festivals. So it had quite a wide angle to it. But the main thing that festivals do is, besides obviously it can help you get on the road to Oscar and get seen, is it when you're there at a film festival, you can actually meet some great people, and a lot of things happen at a festival in yourself as a person. So a good example is at the Lone Star Film Festival in Fort Worth in Texas, there was this filmmaker who had his first film and he was very nervous and he hadn't been anywhere besides Dallas and Fort Worth. Never been to LA, never been to Nashville, never been to Boston. And he was like, I don't know what a film festival is. So I took him under my wing and we had a great time. And I saw him change and become a confident person when he began to actually get out and start networking. And we had to be, and it came out as this really funny guy that we never knew was a funny guy. And it changed. And he said, now I feel really confident to make my next film. And now I feel like I can keep in touch with these people and really get my film off the ground. So it can change you as a person, also build your confidence, build your growth, and feel really grounded in yourself. It's a really powerful thing that festivals do. You can meet people to make new films with. You can win awards, get recognition. They're quite abundant events, what happens there. I mean, I've met loads of people at festivals, clients, boyfriends, all that kind of thing. And it's quite an adventure for anybody in their journeys.
So Kat says the title of your book has got her attention. So let's talk about
it. It's a great segue. Talk about the book.
Talk about the book, yeah. So the book, actually, another thing that happens in my life, everything happens by accident. So I was studying for, not my PhD, sorry, but it was in a lockdown. And I normally, my routine is I'm always doing something. I'm always out every day, either in London in meetings when I was living in the UK or traveling to a film festival. I'm always doing something. And obviously that came to a halt in the first couple of months of the pandemic when I was in the UK. And I did an interview in an Indian magazine. And then a publisher read it and said, have you ever thought about writing your own story? And I was like, no. And then she said, well, let's have a think about it because there could be something really good in this to really make into a book. So I sat down with her and then the book all came about. And I thought, I want to tell my story regarding how I found my sole purpose and what I was born to do, which being obviously my company, The Film Festival Doctor, and working in film festivals. And then I talk about how to integrate into your business infrastructure standard business practices, but also spiritual techniques. And it's like how I work. So it's kind of like a how-to book, how to find what you should be doing. And so obviously the pandemic, people got laid off and people lost jobs. Actually, people then thought maybe what I should do is what I want to do. So the whole book was to teach them how to tap into that and how to set up your first business using the right techniques and principles.
So spiritual techniques, like what? Give us a little taste.
Taster. So the book talks about how it tells you how to bring in feng shui, manifestation and vision boards, and cosmic ordering, which is a very fun technique to bring into your daily routine.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. What's cosmic
ordering? Is that when you're like, hey, Pluto, get over there?
Oh, I thought it was the opposite. Like you call Amazon and you say, I'd like a new star, please.
Oh,
kind of. So yeah, I heard about this when I first got into spirituality. I was in my late 20s, but then someone told me about it, but I didn't really look into it. But then I did look into it a few years later. And basically what it is, it's like literally placing an order with the universe for what you want. So when you go to a restaurant, you're very specific, you know, I want to order cheesy chips with lemonade, with lime and a margarita pizza. So you're very specific what you want. So it's similar things are like that. So what you say is what I really want is a car parking space upon my arrival to Larchmont High Street for the good of all concerned. That's what you say at the end, so no one loses out for you to gain. So I did that and I thought, right, I was in UK when I learned about this. So I thought I'm going to drive into Soho today in London. And that place is the worst place to get a parking space to see if this actually works because no one can get one. So I thought, right, okay. Let me give this a shot. So I did it and I asked to get a parking space when I got to London Soho. So I was driving in and I thought, okay, traffic's bad. And I was just driving through looking at the spaces and someone just pulled out and that was my space. I thought, well, maybe this does work. So I say cosmic orders pretty much every day and I integrate it into my business routine where when I set my goals, I place them as cosmic orders, what I want to happen in the day for my clients and myself.
For the good of all concerned.
Yes. I know it's such a weird thing because I was like, what? But then it does work because you're being specific, asking what you want. So it's kind of like manifesting, but it's just being a bit different because you're not being too general. You are being very specific and you're placing literally like an order this time. But they do all gel together. That's why I mentioned the book that it's always important to do that. And manifesting, visualizing each day is important to get what you want to come through. And also vision board is also good to really set yourself in alignment with your goals.
Well, you can't claim it if you can't name it. And also I think people who don't expect to see a parking spot won't see a parking spot. If you know, like exactly. They'd be driving past it already thinking, oh, well, there's not going to be one.
Exactly.
As I was searching around in a competitive search engine that we'll talk about in our next ad read, I landed on this thing. And now I would like to cosmically order that man to stop wearing that shirt.
Stop it, guy. He makes him happy. What makes him happy?
That's what that song sounds like. So anyway, so that and several other techniques, because we didn't really dig too deep into your techniques, but you have several others that you feel are being sort of left out of business is what we're to understand. Is that why the book had to come the way it did?
That's correct. There's another thing as well is feng shui. Like a lot of people probably resonate feng shui as being in their home, you know, and putting everything in the right energy fields and for wisdom, health, and financial success, etc., and romance.
Oh no. Did Rebecca freeze?
A perfect time to point out that she's in Mexico City.
Oh, Mexico City, right. Well, Rebecca, and, refresh and come back. We have a couple ad reads we can do in the meantime. So let's do that.
Let me do that. I'll boot. She's out. And then, well, sorry, only Rebecca, she'll be back. Don't go anywhere.
Well, it's so funny she's talking about feng shui, because I was a law clerk, and I was like into feng shui at the time, and one of the judges had me decorate his chambers like in accordance with the principles, and people used to say all the time how comfortable they felt there and how much they liked it. And I was like, you know what you could use? It's like, you need like a dragon sculpture or something. So he went to this little hole in the wall shop he'd never been in before and ran into somebody he'd known in Cambodia when he was over there. Wow. And they were like, who is this fortune teller? This is really lucky. We need to get her in here.
That's insane.
Yeah. Well,
there's living proof of feng shui just right out my window and a little to the left. There's this restaurant that they built over running water, and running water it takes away your financial success. And so you're not supposed to do anything in alignment directly with that. This place goes out of business all the time, whoever ends up being there.
Oh, wow. Well, they need like mirrors or something, right? Like reflect that out again.
That's right. Well, listen, if you want to learn about feng shui, one place you could go to do that is presearch.com. Look at this search engine. This is a search engine that I've been using now for maybe 4 weeks, could be five. Every time I remember, and that's quite often, because you know, we're being sponsored by them. I said I should probably use it. And what I'm finding when I do, I keep forgetting to log in. What I keep finding is fun about it, though, is that the results are interesting. The results are different than the world's most popular search engine. And there's some really cool opportunities in there, like what we've been talking about, like staking keywords. So if you wanted to be the cosmic ordering keyword, you could put that right to the Film Doctor's website.
That's so cool.
Feng to the shui.
Hey, you remember to log in.
Would you like filmdoctor.online? You could have
sure
it.
Sure would.
Just got to go to cbrogan.me/online, put in the code Chris, all caps.
And should you gift it to your...
Yeah, well, I mean, I could buy a domain every single night of the week that way. I would love it. Hey, do you like our video show?
Hey.
Don't like us? Hey.
Oh.
You can go don't like us. Podcast. Yeah, I don't like the way we look. We're funny looking, smelly. We're sand, we're coarse, we get everywhere.
Can you speak for yourself?
Go anywhere there's podcasts and you'll find us, but that's because we're hosted on Castos, castos.com.
What if you prefer audio podcasts to producing video shows, castos.com can host your podcast files, and you can from there syndicate them out to everywhere else.
All right, that one too.
Well, we didn't get her back. I'm really sad about that.
Rebecca's, I guess, run off into the city. She's decided that
Mexico City. Well, so south of Mexico City, I guess the internet is a little spotty. So let's be fair about that. But I think everybody who hasn't already should go check out thefilmfestivaldoctor.com and her book, Born to Do It, Becoming the Leader of a Business Niche Using Powerful Spiritual Techniques. I'm going to pick that one up.
Kat says, and I don't know who you is in this case, could be anyone on the earth at this point. I pulled this tarot card for you and it says, you've already got everything over a year ago, just saying. So I'm going to say it's for me. Hey, I've got everything I need.
So, well, Kat, can I have a tarot card too?
I've been saying I'd go for some readings. I'm down for it.
I would. Let's do it.
Rebecca Louisa Smith is not coming back, I feel.
I don't think so. Well, I'll tell you this much. She came from a completely different background into doing work in the film festival circuit and like made a name for herself and a whole business. Talk about manifesting, made a whole business based on helping people get their films into festivals. And now she's been doing it for a decade. And I think that's amazing. So.
Oh, it was me. That was my card. That was my card. This is like playing, it's like the magic act, like pick a card, any card, but with tarot.
What?
It's like.
Oh, the tarot card said you already have it in your bag. Yeah, she says for you.
Yeah, I've got it. Yes.
Well, it makes sense. She wouldn't have picked one for me. But I mean, you can now.
Pick a card. It'd be fun. You can come on camera if you're ready.
So I think that there's a lot to manifesting, like Rebecca was talking about, that has to do with just forming your own intention firmly in your head so that you see opportunities. Seriously, it says vroom, vroom.
Wow, that came true too.
I manifested a really nice car. It goes really fast.
I think you're so right about the manifesting thing. And it's one of those, you feel like such a doofus if you talk to somebody about it and they're super not into it. But when you talk to people who are into it, a lot of times they can point to some really straightforward examples of it. That it's almost like when you watch The Secret, the movie The Secret, based on the book of the same title. The first like half of that feels pretty good, and then the second half of that you're kind of like, I don't know. But
so all I can tell you is that the week my really good friend passed away, I was going through books to return some to the library. And one of the books on the topmost shelf was The Power of Intention. I'm like, well, this is, I literally said, well, this is some bullshit. I pulled the book out. And it was a Christmas gift she'd given me in like 2004 or something. And it had this big, beautiful written note in it about how, you know, she was sure I was already doing all the things in this book and, you know, putting my intentions out there. And, but the fact that I found it that week, I was like, you know, there is something to this, to all of this. But I just think if you're not clear in your own mind about what it is you want to have happen, you can't very well expect it to happen.
It's not coming.
So, right. It's not coming. You're just gonna be like, well, I guess I'll see what happens with my own life and hope I like it.
It's that's crazy. You know, I've been such a bah humbug for so many years about a lot of this stuff. And, you know, Kat's pointing out that she's doing tarot readings and stuff like that. I'm so not for it, you know, or wasn't for many, many years. I just didn't feel it. I just was. And every time I talk to really spiritual people, I get that kind of like take their lunch money kind of feeling in myself. But more and more and more and more and more, I just see examples of it working. And it's, I think one of the things that clouds us from thinking about it is just that, or believing it or whatever, is just that it doesn't work for the more extreme, obscure things that you could ask for it to do. And it doesn't work like when you ask it to work. It just works like somehow something aligns. But, or, you know, it's like it's a tool we don't understand super well. So we think it's every time we shake the thing, but it's not. But we're doing like causality or whatever, and we're thinking it is.
Oh, right. Yes.
So that's what I'm thinking. I feel like there's something to it. So her book was, what was it? Born to Do Me?
Born to Do It.
Stop it. No, I meant like do, like be me, like you do you.
No, that's
Look, there's a secret. It says on the beginning, Feng Shui expert from The Secret gave one of the quotes. So there we go.
No way. Cool. Well, check out the book. Check out Rebecca. Go to the filmfestivaldoctor.com. And you know, all things considered, I actually think we got quite a lot covered in the time we did have.
Hit her pretty
I'm actually pretty happy things. About it.
So maybe she just wanted to play with those dogs more. I don't know.
No, I'm sure she's horrified that her internet went out, but that's okay.
I'm not horrified.
I really enjoyed it and I learned a lot. And now I'm going to come up with a film idea. No, I'm not.
I'll tell you who had a pretty good film idea. But I said, Grammy, not everyone's just as comfortable in their nudity as you are.